This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 16th, 2018. Welcome, I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, regular features like the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, news from around the Pacific Rim, Cascadia Calling, news from around the Pacific Northwest, the Big Deal feature, with less than 5 weeks until the October 20th municipal elections across British Columbia, I interview pollster Mario Canseco of Research Co. to find out the latest on the Vancouver civic election. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those who deserve it. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or does British Columbia's municipal politics need reform? The provincial government's mail-in referendum on proportional representation, which is to be decided late this fall, is competing for attention with municipal elections, which are scheduled for October 20th. That's when British Columbians will elect mayors and councillors. Local politicians whose duty is to regulate land use, to operate streets and sewers, and to oversee police and fire departments. It's not sexy stuff, but it affects your daily life and your pocketbook. Local government elections happen once every 4 years. That's when you have the power to make a difference in your community. Go to the debates, go to the community meetings, read your local community newspapers and websites. If your local radio and TV stations aren't giving you the information you need, let them know. The Breaker is also here. Send me your tips to Bob at thebreaker.news. The NDP government's campaign finance reforms haven't gone far enough. They've left too many loopholes that need to be plugged. But that won't happen before October 20th. In Vancouver, there are too many candidates. There's 21 for mayor and 71 for city council's 10 seats. Involvement in the process is positive and it should never be discouraged, but why not a two-step process in 2022? There should really be a runoff in the spring to narrow the numbers of candidates before the fall election. It would give citizens a better chance to decide who is serious and who is worthy of holding public office. The more information and the more debate about the issues and the people who say they have the solutions, the better for all. But if a proportional representation referendum that could fail is all the NDP government is willing to give British Columbians, then that is a missed opportunity for local politics. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the South China Morning Post, Jeffy Lam reports, "Last governor of Hong Kong, Chris Patten, calls on Britain to speak up when one country, two systems is undermined." Chris Patten was addressing a panel at the Open Future Festival organized by The Economist in Hong Kong via London, which touched on free speech and press freedom. Patten believed British officials should do more and say more about Hong Kong. Quote, "I think they have been more explicit in the last year or two about the plain breaches that are undermining the joint declaration and the promises made in that by China and Britain," Patten said. "But I think they should, like the rest of the international community, be more outspoken." His remarks came a week after the British government issued its latest six-month report on Hong Kong, in which Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt reiterated the Sino-British Joint Declaration remained relevant today, despite earlier contrasting claims by the Chinese officials. The report also warned of growing concerns over the issue of free speech in Hong Kong. In the New Zealand Herald, Ben Leahy reports, "New Zealand house prices most overvalued in the world, behind only Hong Kong." The Kiwi housing market was also deemed to be the fifth most at risk among OECD nations, according to an Oxford Economics report. The report considered New Zealand's house prices to be overvalued by a rating of 179 in its valuation index, with only Hong Kong rated higher at 203. Canadian house prices were overvalued by a rating of 173, with Australia's rating sitting at 160. Sweden was ranked the most at-risk OECD housing market, followed by Australia, Canada, and Hong Kong. Quote, "In all four, valuations are very elevated, there has been a lengthy housing boom, debt levels are high, and there is a significant share of floating-rate debt," Oxford lead economist Adam Slater said, according to Bloomberg. In Hawaii News Now, Maliani Richardson reports, iconic dancer in Hawaii Five-O opening credits remembered for her wit and warmth. From 1968 to 1980, Helen Kuowa Torko's dancing shook up the original Hawaii Five-O in the opening credits. In the pilot episode, Jack Lord couldn't take his eyes off the captivating dancer, and neither could viewers. But her husband, Al Torko, was her biggest fan. Quote, "When the show came out in the theater in Waikiki, oh, who's that? It was exciting. It was really exciting," he said. "She has that charm, and she's really graceful because of dancing," he added. Kuowa Torko died August 10th after a battle with cancer. On September 14th, her family and friends remembered her at a funeral service in Kaneohe. Kuowa Torko also appeared in the 5-0 reboot with Scott Kahn and was even interviewed by Al Roker on the Today Show. When Hawaii News Now spoke to her in 2011, she was believed to be the only survivor from the show's opening. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines about the Pacific Northwest. In the Bellingham Herald, David Rossbach reports, Bellingham man indicted in scheme to traffic fentanyl disguised as oxycodone pills. A 30-year-old Bellingham man is one of two charged September 14th in a multi-count indictment for a scheme to allegedly traffic fentanyl disguised as fake prescription oxycodone pills in Whatcom, Skagit, and Snohomish counties. Law enforcement searches of a car and an Arlington house with a hidden room reportedly yield more than 10,000 fentanyl pills, nearly $1 million in cash, jars of gold coins, and an arsenal of firearms. Bellingham's Griffin Thompson was charged by U.S. Attorney Annette Hayes on suspicion of conspiracy and possession of fentanyl with the intent to distribute, according to a Department of Justice press release. Bradley Willard, 39, of Arlington, was arrested as he attempted to cross the border into Mexico on September 1st and is charged in five counts of the indictment alleging drug distribution and illegal firearms possession, according to the release. In the Oregonian, Bethany Barnes reports, Portland's public schools' permissive dress code spreads to other districts. Oregon's largest school district changed its policy 2 years ago. As a result, students are now only required to cover the breast area, wear shoes, and cover anywhere underwear goes, with the exception of the waistband. The idea was to free teachers from policing pants lengths and strap widths, and end the overpunishment of girls, hat wearers, and gender-fluid kids, among others. The Vox piece from this week was titled, Students Are Waging War on Sexist and Racist School Dress Codes, and They're Winning. School districts such as Evanston's District 202 and California's San Jose United have either borrowed heavily from the dress code policy or adopted it outright. And the CBC's Andrew Cruzada reports, a man dressed as a jug of Kool-Aid is the only reason there is a mayor's race in Terrace, BC. When comedian Danny Nunez decided to run for mayor of Terrace, dressed as the Kool-Aid man, he thought his Facebook videos and live appearances might help drum up interest in October's municipal election. Now, Nunez finds himself the sole person challenging incumbent Carol LeClaire to lead a city he doesn't even live in. Terrace, at least, will have a mayor's race. Prince Rupert, Fort St. John, and Quesnel all have incumbents set to be elected by acclamation, while the mayors of northern BC's remaining two cities, Prince George and Dawson Creek, are facing off against last-minute candidates with no previous political experience. That's leading to fears among political watchers in the province's top half that voter turnout on October 20th could hit historic lows. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. With 5 weeks to go, the Vancouver civic election campaign is heating up. On this edition, my latest check-in with pollster Mario Canseco of Research Co. Research Co.'s latest poll found 46% of respondents said they would definitely or probably consider voting for Green Party candidates, and 38% said they would vote for independent candidates for city council. When it comes to the race for the mayoralty, independent former Burnaby NDP MP Kennedy Stewart has the confidence of 33% of respondents, followed by Hector Bremner and Shauna Sylvester at 26% each, and the NPA's Ken Sim at 24%. I interviewed Mario Canseco at Mahoney & Sons in Falls Creek after the candidate registration deadline passed on September 14th. Ian Campbell, Vision's anointed successor to Mayor Gregor Robertson, mysteriously dropped out of the race on September 10th. The decade-long Vision Vancouver dynasty at City Hall appears to be over. I asked Mario what Campbell's late withdrawal means for Vision Vancouver.
Well, it's definitely going to be tougher to try to campaign when you don't have a mayoral candidate. Not having a mayoral candidate means you don't get to go to the debates, unless there's a council debate somehow organized by somebody. You don't get to go and have the large television interviews or radio interviews or go to the editorial board meetings with the papers. So anybody who's running for council or for parks board or for school board for Vision Vancouver is at an extreme disadvantage. I think this definitely shows the collapse of the partisan structure that dominated City Hall for the past 10, 15 years. I mean, we still had the NPA with a lot of people running and a very credible candidate for mayor. But Vision, this is absolutely bizarre, to go from forming the government and having a majority in council to not running anybody and being in great danger of not having anybody elected. It's definitely one of the most astonishing collapses that we have seen for a partisan in all the story that the city of Vancouver has when it comes to actual partisan politics. It's just very, very different from the situation that we imagined. And I think, you know, part of it is that they waffled for so long. You know, we thought Robertson was going to run again. He decided not to. Then they said that we're going to have a candidate. Kennedy Stewart comes out. Shauna Sylvester comes out. And then they say they want to have a candidate. It's just been all over the place. And I think what it shows in a way is there's not a lot of support for the brand as it is. You know, when I asked about mayoral candidates back in July, the level of support for Campbell was around 18%. This is coming from an election where Gregor Robertson got 46% of the vote. So when you're only holding on to a third of the people who voted for the previous person who was the candidate for the party and who has the job you're seeking, then you got a problem.
Kennedy Stewart has been probably working the hardest on the campaign trail throughout the summer. Do you think that Kennedy Stewart can sustain this? This is, again, someone who comes from the NDP sphere. He is running as an independent, but he's an NDP politician. We saw what happened in 2013 with Adrian Dix in BC. We saw what happened in 2015 federally with Tom Mulcair. They were both pegged at the start of the campaign as the next one, the next leader, the next premier or prime minister. Is Kennedy Stewart really going to be the next mayor, or are we going to see an NDP defeat?
Well, it's still really up in the air. I think part of the problem is you do have a front runner of sorts, but we have a humongous level of undecideds. It's nothing like I've ever seen in all the elections that I've done municipally, provincially, even going back to elections in the U.S. or in Britain that I've covered. I've never seen a situation where more than a third of the population is genuinely undecided. Part of it had to do with the notion that people would drop out. And I think maybe people expected some of the independent candidates to drop out and not the Vision candidates. So that also throws a little bit of a curveball in the way in which people feel. It's tough to campaign as the person who is ahead. Everybody's going to come out and get you. There's going to be discussions about things. You're going to be seen as a much more credible candidate and not as somebody who's just running for the quirkiness of it. And I think we do have a lot of candidates who would fit that description at this stage. The most difficult thing, I think, is going to be trying to appeal to the center voter, if there's such a thing as a center voter, somebody who maybe would have voted NPA or Vision in the past and who is looking for an option. Is that option going to be Shauna Sylvester? Are they going to go for Kennedy Stewart? Are they going to go for Hector Bremner? So there's a lot of people now who aren't really that partisan. And I think what we've seen in the polling over the past couple of months is that, you know, there's no longer a partisan structure where 80% of the votes are going to go to a couple of people. I think it's really all open right now. And you know, one of the difficulties that Kennedy is going to have is, can I connect with people who don't know who I am and who maybe would not vote for somebody from the NDP? If that's the case, then it'll be a little bit easier for him to start to search. But it really is up to the other candidates to try to counter that balance.
Where do you think David Chen of Pro Vancouver sits?
Well, it's interesting because there's definitely a lot of people who are connecting with what he's saying. I think part of the problem is that the party is fairly new. It's difficult to try to make sense of where things are going at this stage. I was able to host a candidates meeting for Latin Cuba, and he was definitely good. He connected with the voters. He was talking about specific things and was very careful. I think what really struck me about him is he understood the jurisdictional aspects. You know, it's interesting to dream in a scenario where you're going to be the mayor and you're going to be calling the shots on a bunch of things. And he was the first one to say, well, actually, that's not our jurisdiction. Actually, that has to go through the provincial government. Actually, that's a federal thing. So he's definitely well informed about the way government works, certainly more than many other candidates that have run for office before. I think part of it has to do with how he connects on the housing file. You know, there's definitely people who are running with him who have been very critical of what the government has done. They can get some momentum and try to get those numbers up for sure.
Now, your most recent poll found a lot of people are looking at independence. But do you think that will sustain itself? Will people actually be choosy, go look at independence, vote for independence, or will they draw themselves back to recognized brands?
Well, I think one of the things that I'm curious about is who are the independents? You know, there might be a situation where people just say they're voting for somebody else because they don't like the options at their disposal. So what I'd like to know is that 38% of people who say I'm voting for independence, are they all the same independents? Are we talking about somebody like Erin Shum or Adrian Crook or Sarah Blith? We need to know where those independents are going. But I think what this says is people are sick of the partisan rancor. You know, we see it in the polling, and we've seen it consistently for the past few months. Nobody wants a party to control things. And this is going to be a fascinating case study for policy majors at one point, because we're bound to have a council that is not going to be dominated by a single party. And are we in for 4 years of things where everything is going to get done by committee and talking about things and figuring out the best ideas, or are we heading for 4 years where nothing gets done? And if that's the case, then we might see a return of the partisan structure in 2022. But right now, people are having that attitude of saying, oh, there might be this person I like from the NPA, there might be this person I like from Vision. I want to spread it around. I'll vote for one COPE, one city. There's a couple of independents I like, and there's the Greens, who are definitely ahead. So if that's going to be the council, it's going to be pretty difficult for the mayor to say, well, this is my agenda, because you won't be able to have one when there's nobody there to say yes to what you want to do.
Now, the right wing is quite crowded. You know, Hector Bremner is trying to portray himself as a bit of a centrist, trying to run up the middle, trying to cater to some of those on the left who were in Vision Vancouver, federal liberals especially. He's strong in that aspect, but he really is more to the right, maybe campaigning to the left, but he intends to govern to the right if he was able to govern. Now there's Wai Young of Coalition Vancouver, the former Conservative MP, Fred Harding of Vancouver First. The big question here is, are they running against Ken Sim and the NPA, or are they running to take over City Hall?
It would seem that it's the first one. You know, part of the problem is Wai Young wanted to be the NPA nominee, didn't get it, or decided not to pursue it. Hector Bremner definitely wanted to be the NPA nominee, and the NPA decided that they didn't want to have him. Fred Harding is an interesting choice, because for a long time, we have talked about the idea of having a law and order candidate. And there were discussions, I remember, a few years ago of maybe running the former police chief as a candidate. And you know, Fred Harding certainly fits that bill of being the law and order guy, even if he lives in a different jurisdiction. So there's definitely that split in the center, right, depending on the things that you like or don't like. This is one of the reasons to have this field of candidates and to have everybody from, let's say, 5 to 10% when it comes to the so-called minor candidates. Everybody has something they hate or love. If you hate the bike lanes, Wai Young is your candidate, and you're going to stay there. If you want law and order, you're looking at Fred Harding. If you want something to do things differently and you like youth and something to that effect, then you have Hector Bremner. But it's been difficult for all of them to try to connect on the policy side of things. You know, hating bike lanes might get you 10% of the vote, but it's not going to get you anything else. And that 10% of the vote is coming from the column that usually would go to Ken Sim. So there's definitely a spoiler role that all of them could play. If for the sake of argument, Hector Bremner starts to climb the charts, then it becomes more a situation of, if you're a center-right-minded voter, do you essentially abandon the idea of the two-party system that we used to have and go there? And, you know, we still have time for something like that to happen, but for that to happen, you need to establish that emotional connection with the voters. And at this stage, it's not there. If it were there, we wouldn't have as many undecideds as we have.
What does Ken Sim and the NPA have to do to gain back those voters, to unite the right in the days left?
Well, I think one of them is trying to portray themselves as a force for change, but not the kind of change that would make the NPA voter uneasy. And I think that's been part of the difficulty and one of the reasons why they didn't do so well under Peter Ladner or under Suzanne Anton. They did significantly better under Kirk LaPointe. They didn't win the mayoralty, but they got more seats than they had before. So part of it is trying to establish that connection and essentially figuring out what the voter from the center-right wants from things. And you know, this isn't necessarily being derogatory towards the other center-right candidates, but essentially placing themselves as the only ones who can get things done. Now, that being said, I think running 9 council candidates was a mistake. It definitely allows people to look at certain people that they like, and the vote seems to be split in ways that are not going to be helpful towards their cause. You know, we are in an election where people are consistently saying, I don't want anybody getting a majority. You would have been better off running 5 or 6 candidates, hoping for that majority if it happens, but not trying to establish a situation where you're expecting 9 people to win. So it's going to be very frustrating for some of the NPA candidates to say, well, maybe there were too many of us, and this is one of the reasons why we only got 1 or 2 seats at the end of the night.
That was my interview with Mario Canseco of Research Co. Check out his website, researchco.ca. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to everyone who dug in their pockets or offered to donate their hair to the charity Wigs for Kids after a heartless thief stole 150 wigs that were meant for kids with cancer. Good news from the Vancouver police that 66 of the wigs were found, but here's hoping the thief is found and brought to justice. But in the meantime, a salute to all those who have offered to help this charity that helps put a smile on the faces of suffering children. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 16th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on September 16th in 1908, the General Motors Corporation was founded? In 2009, the auto giant that was founded by William Durant in Detroit went bankrupt during the Great Recession, but it was bailed out by governments in the U.S. and Canada. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. Thanks to some of our supporters like Quan Lee, Randy Sogstad, James Plett, Spruce Hill Contracting, Daryl Greer, Barbara May, Elvie Oxiez, John Kennedy, and Dave and Burnaby. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.